Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network. Your home for hockey talk covering every team in the NHL. New episodes every Monday. Download at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
This is the Leaf Sky Podcast. Here's your host, Jim Taddy.
Hi, everybody. Thank you, Mike Ross, for that fine introduction. Welcome to Leaf Sky, episode 140. Jim Taddy with you for the next 25 minutes or so. Dave McCarthy from SiriusXM NHL.com will be our special guest, and he's going to drop by shortly. Before we get going, bet the action on the ice with the DraftKings Sportsbook. Here is the call to action. Download the app now. Use the code THPN. New customers can get $150 instantly in bonus bets for betting just $5 on hockey. That's the code THPN, only on DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for complete details. All right, what do we have here? The Maple Leaf story goes like this. Two games this week so far. A nice win over the St. Louis Blues on home ice. And then Thursday night, a interesting overtime win over the Philadelphia Flyers again on home ice. Let's go back to the St. Louis game. Some big names were out of the lineup. And guess what? Bobby McMahon stepped up and canned a hat trick. The first goal of that hat trick is really superior, wins a puck battle, steals the puck, goes in, jams it in, and this is a working-class goal that seems to escape the Leafs on a regular basis. The next game, Austin Matthews goes wild in the second period, three consecutive goals. Oh, yes, guy, the natural hat trick, now has 45 in the season, and yet it took a superb goal by Nylander in overtime to seal the win 4-3 over the visiting and pesky Philadelphia Flyers. The Leafs, with a solid overtime, controlled the puck from the opening draw, got one line change, and on that line change, Nylander goes in and scores. And the Leafs, with some good goaltending from Sammy, really persevered and got a win, even though they had a 3-1 lead at one point. So it's been that kind of week for the Leafs. We'll explore this further. Here is our conversation with Dave McCarthy from NHL.com, SiriusXM. All right, Dave, so we've got two wins this week by the Maple Leafs and two totally different wins, 4-1 over St. Louis, 4-3 in overtime over Philadelphia on home ice. And getting there in both cases was all the fun, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you never quite know what you're going to get out of this team, really. You know, you go into the game on Tuesday against St. Louis knowing they were going to be without Morgan Riley, which in the days leading up to it, everybody was concerned about how they're going to make do without a guy that eats up 24 minutes a night and has been having a really good year on a blue line that, even with Riley included, I think we can all agree requires some level of upgrade. So Riley's not available that game. And then half hour before puck drop, you find out that Mitch Marner and John Tavares aren't going to be available. And you think, oh man, they could be in one today. And then they turn out and they play, quite honestly, one of their best complete team games of the season. They really gave St. Louis nothing. You get a hat trick from Bobby McMahon. Who saw that coming? Guy that wasn't expected to be in the lineup in the morning that day. I thought Robertson was really good. I thought TJ Brody was really good in that game. Maybe the best he's looked. So that was really an impressive outing. And then against Philadelphia on Thursday, like they were kind of asleep for half the game. You know, thank God Ilya Samsonov showed up, because that game could have been over with by the time Austin Matthews went legend and got rolling. I mean, the way that guy scores goals when he starts feeling it really is impressive. But that game to me had the, okay, Austin, you just do it for us. The game prior had the feeling of, okay, we're all going to do this for Morgan. But, hey, two games through a five-game suspension, and Gareb Edman's hearing Morgan's appeal on Friday as we sit here and speak. So maybe he gets knocked down a game. Who knows? But at least through two games, you can't argue with the fact that the Leafs put 4 points in the bank without their best defenseman.
I mean, I'm intrigued by both wins, but I'm going to circle back to the Thursday night win because I think it has everything that you would need to describe the Maple Leaf hockey team. Soft start, turnover at the other blue line that comes back all the way down the ice and goes in a shorthanded play that should never happen, but it did. And then you've got Austin Matthews dominating like nobody else can outside of Connor McDavid in that second period. Then you've got a 3-1 lead that's blown. And you know, part of the getting the 3-1 lead is superb play by the goaltender, Sammy. And then you've got a Philadelphia rally solved by just an excellent overtime where the Flyers never had possession of the puck. The Leafs got a line change and scored on the line change to win that game. I mean, that literally is everything. That's the DNA of the Leafs right there, isn't it?
Yeah, it was funny. I was talking to David Alter last night. He had a good line. He said this Leafs team is like a sugar high, right? You're feeling kind of down, and so you know you have a few cookies or a bowl of ice cream, or whatever. And you get this little rush, which we saw for 7:49 when Matthews went legend, and then you inevitably crash. And you just hope you can get to bed before you end up on the floor. And even if you do, you come away not really feeling all that good about it. So that's basically the best way I can describe that Philadelphia game. Because, yeah, it was nice they picked up 4 points. But I'd much rather see the team that I saw on Tuesday night. That, to me, is a style that can take you somewhere in the playoffs.
Yeah, and so why did they play that way? Because they had to. So a lot of times we would have described the Flyers that way, and a lot of teams that come into Scotiabank Arenas, they play that way because they have to, because they don't have the Leafs firepower. But when the Leafs firepower is there, they're not going to play like that, are they?
And that's the conundrum of the whole thing, right? Like, if they played that way that they did against St. Louis, when they have their best guys in the lineup, that's when I think you can happen upon a recipe that's darn near not impossible, but really difficult to beat, right? But it seems like when their top guys are in the lineup more often than not this year, a lot of the games that they win because somebody goes legend for 7, 8, 10 minutes, and then they hope to hang on. So, like, I don't know. How many games can you think back this year, Tatman, where you can really remember complete games? Like, the Nashville game, 4-0, comes to mind.
It was a win over Vancouver.
Win over Vancouver, the Dallas game, couple against Winnipeg, St. Louis. Like, we're talking maybe 6, 7, maybe 8 games. Eight
would be a stretch, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, yet here they are with these 4 points in the bank this week, and you know, some teams around them losing, like Detroit, suddenly they're in a lot better of a position again.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think they should finish third in their division, unless Boston falls off the face of the earth, which I don't see. And Florida's on a bit of a heater now. So, so they're, you know, it's just that the funny thing about it is that in the summer, most people predicted that Florida would drop off, and so would Boston, and neither one of them has.
No. I mean, Florida, to me, has, if anything, improved on what we saw in the tail end of last regular season and throughout the playoffs. I think they're proving this year that was not an aberration. That was a case of it took them, 76 games to zero in on what kind of a team they are and how they need to play in order to have success. Yeah. And they figured it out in the nick of time, and now they've committed to playing like that every single night. And because of it, they're one of the top teams in the league. And I would suggest they're going to be a very difficult out in the playoffs this year. So, no, Florida's for real. Boston, you know, are they starting to hit the skids a little bit? I mean, I still think they have some issues up the middle of the ice that they'd like to rectify. We'll see if they go out and do that prior to the deadline. But this Florida team, to me, is one that you have to pay some serious attention to.
The story behind the story for the win over Philadelphia on Thursday night for me was the coaching staff, in particular Sheldon Keefe, who came up with different rotations. Sometimes the blue line pairings changed, and up front you could see some shuffling. And clearly Tyler Bertuzzi with a big gaffe on a third period penalty in the offensive zone. Nice got moved around because he wasn't defensively responsible in his own zone. But you could feel those tweaks when you're watching the game, couldn't you?
Yep, I thought Sheldon Keefe was hands-on in a good way last night, putting people in positions to succeed and taking away ice time from guys that just didn't deserve it. Look, if you're going to go 30 games and score one goal when you're making 5.5 sheets, you better not take dumb penalties in the third period 200 feet from your net. And that's what Tyler Bertuzzi did. So I think it was the right call to sit him down. And give his minutes to somebody else. So look, the way Bobby McMahon's playing lately, hat trick Bobby. I tweeted midway through the game, I think just before Matthews really started to feel it, was that I wouldn't be against seeing hat trick Bobby move up the lineup a little bit. And well, seriously, right?
Maybe yeah,
get some minutes with Tavares and because the guy's playing in a way that I think you would like to see someone in that role play. He's being hard on pucks. He's winning battles for loose pucks. He's being physical. He's taking the puck to the net. He's retrieving. Like, that's what you want out of that guy. So I think, you know, the mark of good coaching to me is to identify guys who are going and guys who are not, and then allocate the minutes accordingly. And I think Bobby McMahon has earned more minutes right now. I'm not saying he's going to be the answer moving forward for all time as a top six guy. But if the guy's feeling it right now and his play demands it, give him a few more minutes, because I think he's played really well.
There's just so many layers to that win over Philadelphia. I want to go back to Konecny, who is a really good hockey player. You wish the Leafs had him. Mm-hmm. And so he strips the puck of Domi in a shorthanded situation for Philadelphia. Goes down the ice, rings one off the post, and then seconds later, Sanheim is able to score, left unattended in front because the Leafs are on some sort of a fire drill. That holds up. Matthews gets his first goal on a Marner stretch pass that comes out of nowhere and goes right in, and the goaltender, Harrison, just left too much on the far side, and that was easy. Then the next play is the one that I laugh at, because it's a Philadelphia penalty kill, Philadelphia penalty kill again. Konecny takes the puck in sort of the opposite side, so the mirror image goes down, Sammy makes a save, and then seconds later, Matthews gets his second of the game on a power play, and then the tide is absolutely tipped.
Yeah, I mean, give Konecny a lot of credit, because he stole the puck twice on Philadelphia's first goal, both at the blue line, and then he won the puck battle again after he went and got it after he hit the post. And as you said, everybody had fallen asleep there, and suddenly Sanheim's wide open in front.
Oh.
I quite honestly, I thought the play was over. I'd taken my eyes off the play for a second, and then before I know it, I'm looking down and I'm seeing Sanheim. It's like, how did that even happen? So, I mean, those are the type of things that really shoot the team in the foot, that they have got to find a way to cut out if they want to be a really serious contender. But, you know, the Matthews second goal, like a one-timer on the power play glove side from the right dot, like that's just disrespectful. Like there was no real, who scores from there? Seriously.
That's a rip. A rip.
It really was. And then I thought, as well, we should mention the third goal. Like, what tremendous communication. Because I was watching that go down in real time after Liljegren makes a great play to keep it in at the line with his hand. And toward the end of a shift, he said after the game he kind of wanted Matthews to touch the puck so they could get a whistle and at least a neutral zone faceoff and get a change. But you could tell Matthews was yelling at him, play it. Because Liljegren, obviously the only guy eligible to play the puck, given that it had touched his hand. And in doing so, he gets it to Matthews, who could obviously sense that he could get wide open if Liljegren just touches the puck and gets it to him. And then, again, a cartoonish shot from fairly far out where you should be able to score from. And that really obviously didn't put the game away, but it put the Leafs in the driver's seat. So I thought that was a really impressive play as well. So there was a lot going on in that game. It was entertaining. Certainly didn't come away from that one bored.
A lot of storylines, and I'm going to go to in the third period. It took Philadelphia a while to even this up. 14-14, Hathaway scores, and then 15-15 on the power play, which is the Bertuzzi penalty. Konechny scores. But I thought before that, they set the tone with a lot of physical play. There's that Benoit hit, and then Delorier goes after him. And there was a lot of physical play there, sort of saber rattling, to say you guys aren't going to get away with this by Philadelphia, like the Leafs aren't going to float to a win. And that's how they that sort of set the table for the two goals, in my opinion.
Yeah, it did. John Tortorella referenced the fact that he did think the fight there kind of swung the tables a little bit. I know some people will roll their eyes, but, it did put a little momentum in the favor of Philadelphia for sure. But look, credit to Benoit too. I mean, a good clean hit. He brings some an element to the team that is Austin Matthews said, not that we don't have at all, but maybe we need a bit more of. And Benoit's done that, and he's drawn that type of response on a couple of occasions. About 10 days ago against the Islanders when they were in town, Bo Horvat came over after Benoit got a good hit on Matty Barzal. So Benoit, I really like. It was interesting after the game. This is what I love about hockey. Like, good tilt, too. And I love, too, when, as York is down, like, there was awareness on both combatants. The fight was going down, but it was like, hang on, let's just step over here. Let's just look a few more steps so we're not on top of Cam. Okay, now let's get after it. Like, that's just respect. And then the two guys, Benoit and Delorier, who know each other from their days in the Ducks organization, were having a nice friendly chat in the hallway outside the locker rooms. I mean, that's just hockey, right? But, I think Benoit's really solidified himself a spot in Toronto's lineup. I think he's been really, really good to the point where when they ultimately do make moves, I don't think he's coming out of the lineup once all the dust settles, so to speak.
Well, he's up to 20 minutes a game, and he's a key contributor. And even if they were to make trades and drop him back into a 5-6, you know that he could always play up if needed.
Yes. Well, yeah, and I talked to him about that on Tuesday because I said, like, you're a perfect example of somebody whose role has grown over the year and that you've taken on more minutes, yet your play has remained steady. I said, how have you made sure that you haven't taken your game to an area where it shouldn't go despite playing more minutes? And he said, well, just because I'm playing more minutes doesn't mean that I'm supposed to be Morgan Rielly. He said, I need to be Simon Benoit more often on any given night. That's all. Just continue to do what makes me successful and understand that and don't get caught up in thinking, well, I'm out here for more minutes. So now I gotta wheel up and down the ice with a puck and all that. No, just give the team, give the coach hard, dependable minutes in the defensive end. Hit the bodies, as he said. That's what makes him successful. I just got to do it more often, which, it sounds easy, but there's the temptation when you're playing more minutes to start to change your game. And if Simon Benoit starts trying to be Morgan Rielly, he'll start looking a lot more like Dave McCarthy or Jim Taddy on the ice, which is not good.
No,
right?
So bad guy.
So, I thought that was really interesting, and it showed really good self-awareness on his part of how to take on more minutes, yet remain as effective as he had been, which led him to earning more minutes. And, like I said, against St. Louis, I think to a man, just about everybody played like that against the Blues.
Okay, let's end on this. You do the post-game stuff with you're down there interviewing coaches. I get to throw to it. So I have to say, in all my career, I've only done that rarely, and I'm not a big fan of the post-game stuff in terms of interviewing coaches and players. It just, for me, it just doesn't work. But you do this, and you do it well. You interviewed Torts last night, right? How did that go?
I actually didn't get to Torts after the game last night, but I was there in the morning. I had to get to the Leaf room last night. But I was there in the morning for Torts. I love talking to Torts. The guy just gives you a real, true, hard, honest quote. I thought it was really interesting. He was talking about how the game has evolved with the young players since he came into the league as a coach decades ago now. Yeah. And, you know, he basically said that, and I think he had one guy in mind as he was saying this, was that young players don't tend to want to wait anymore, don't want to earn the minutes, earn the contract. They just want it right now because their name is so-and-so, and you know, this is my pedigree. He said, we've lost that hierarchy in the room of guys waiting their turn and being willing to fill in roles when you're young and grow into a bigger role. I mean, let's be honest. I think he was talking about Cutter Gauthier, right? But, you know, and then I followed up by asking him, do you think, you know, in order to have success and win Stanley Cups, that some semblance of that hierarchy is still required? Because he granted, he said, the game has changed. Guys have so much skill, and we need to let them play and show that skill. But there are still certain things that are non-negotiable in terms of how you play when you love that word, right? Non-negotiable.
Yeah. That's trademark, guy.
Well, you go talk to Torts.
Did he say non-negotiable?
He said non-negotiable.
Oh, what a weasel.
I know. But he's right in terms of how you play when you don't have the puck, you know, and how you fit into the team concept. And I asked if there's some semblance of that that's still required. And I don't think he quite understood my question. He said, what do you mean? He gave me that steely glance. And I was like, for a half second, I'm like, oh, geez, I might be in one here. And I clarified, and he's like, absolutely. And then he went on and said, you look at the teams that ultimately are left standing at the end, the last two or four teams, they usually take on kind of an old school look to them, right? Like a bunch of older veteran guys that play within a team concept. No one's out running around trying to get on SportsCenter. Everyone's just doing their role and executing it to the highest of their ability. And those are the teams that tend to win at the end of the day. So, you know, say what you will, a lot of talent, absolutely, you got to let guys play. But there's a way, and I truly believe this as well. And I'm not just saying this because I'd like Torts to answer another one of my questions down the road. You know, you have to be willing to fit into that team concept. And if you're not, just a collection of talent alone is not going to win.
Yeah, well, I agree with that. And really what he's saying about hockey players might apply right across the board to society.
That's the way
the world is now, right?
For me and you it is, but I tell you, it's not always how some people see it. And then they wonder why they can't get ahead or, you know, can't solidify them. Like we all make mistakes when we're a little younger. And it's, you know, sometimes you think you're better than you are, and then you learn. And some people learn a little faster than others, and that's how you set yourself up for success. So,
wow, that was profound. I think, Dave, on that note, we should end this. Thanks very much, Dave.
I always love to be profound with you, Tapman. Thanks for having me.
Last minute of play in this podcast.
Well, thank you, Mike Ross, for that time warning. Time now for Lickety Split, Yes Guy, No Guy on the way out. Sammy is better for his struggles. Oh, yes, guy, he is. And every once in a while, you'll see him not happy with a play, puts his head down, works his way out of it. That is a good sign. Yes, guy. Yes, guy, no guy number two. Weird that the Leafs can win without Morgan Rielly. Oh, extremely weird. That is a hard, all capital letters, emphatic yes, guy. Don't know why it happens, but it does, and I guess that's a blessing. And we'll go out on this. Yes, guy, no guy number three. Auston Matthews can carry the team. Oh, yes, guy. He can, he has, and he will continue to. Hope you enjoyed episode 140 of Leaf Sky. Hope you come back next week for episode 141. La, da, 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 da.